Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the months of January and February 2025. I'm your host Robert, and in this roundup, I will tell you about the greatest Christmas album of all time. This is not a joke. And with me, I have...
It's all about sleep nowadays. Sleep theory, sleep token, the sleep of No Dreaming by Porcupine Tree. It's an epidemic of slumber.
And...
Oh, well, let's see. I'm awake. I think I drink too much. I don't know what the sharp figure is. It looks like either it's either somebody with a hoodie.
Looks Hi, like, Mark.
Damn, again.
Speaking of epidemics of slumber, you know, how many times do I have to have this conversation with you, man?
I didn't know I was in another room or another state. I'm on the Florida of all places.
Those locations are so far away. How'd you? God damn it! Did you drink my orange vanilla Coke?
No.
Oh really? Then what's that behind you?
It's a cat.
Yes, it's a cat. Very sleepy cat. Actually, no, really, it's a secret
cat. Oh my goodness, can I pet the kitty?
Don't pet the cat, you'll wake them up.
But, Alex, if not for pets, then why is made of fluff? Do you not understand this, sir?
Oh, I understand it perfectly. They're very finicky, and some of them are very, very light sleepers.
Look, I see a cat, I pet it. I am a simple man. Like, my roommate has two cats. They are both very soft and fluffy, and I pet them a lot. But this is not a podcast about cats.
Yet.
This is the album roundup, and yeah, as always, the year takes a bit to get started, so we're rolling a couple months into one. Maybe three if we have anything from December we want to talk about. Oink. So, yeah, might as well get this dog and pony show rolling. So, let's talk about... First off, what actually did come out the past couple months? Of course, we're going to run it week by week, starting with January and then into February. So, starting at the top, the week of January 3rd, 2025, we had Boldy James and Rich Gaines with their collab album Murder During Drug Traffic. Cursed, the newest album from Swiss deathcore band Paleface Swiss. And there was a new little baby album called Wham. No relation. Then in between, on January 5th, there was a new Bad Bunny project called Debí Tirar Más Fotos. And then on January 8th, a new project from the singer-songwriter Ethel Kane titled Perverts. Now, moving on to January 10th, we had a new Tremonti album with The End Will Show Us How. From the band Stick to Your Guns, we had their new project Keep Planting Flowers. From the band Franz Ferdinand, we had The Human Fear. And we apparently got a country album from Ringo Starr called Look Up. That probably wouldn't be the weirdest country album that comes out in 2025, but that's for later. Alright, so moving on to January 17th. There was some shuffling around here, either that or the internet was telling me wrong dates, but at least as far as stuff we know came out that day, there was a new Sunlux EP called Rise of Make Believe. Risk of Make Believe, sorry. And the new posthumous Mac Miller album, Balloonerism. Then, moving on to January 24th, there was a new album from Harakiri for the Sky with Scorched Earth, Homeboy Sandman with Rich 2.5, Huncho, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Huncho, with For Us, Central C with their debut album, Can't Rush Greatness, album number 2 from Boldy James with Permanent Ink, FKA Twigs with her new album, Eusexua, Kane Brown with his new album, The High Road, and Teddy Swims with I've Tried Everything But Therapy Part 2, which makes me wish I liked Teddy Swims more because that is a very relatable sentiment. Then on January 27th, there was a new project from Pink Sifu with Black Antique. Then moving on to January 31st, last actual Friday of the month. As previously mentioned, Phil Labonte can fuck all the way off. Then, of course, there was a new Mike album with Showbiz. There was Bonnie Prince Billy with The Purple Bird, and The Weeknd with his newest studio album, Hurry Up Tomorrow. Then moving into February, not the first official Friday, but on February 5th, the Japanese group Creepy Nuts had a new album called Legion. Now moving on to February 7th proper, we had the newest album from Ginger with Duel. From the band Obscura, there was Asonication. From the band 16, Guides for the Misguided. From Guided by Voices, there was the album Universe Room. From Real Bad Man and Zaloopers, there was Dear Psilocybin. From Larry June, 2 Chainz and The Alchemist, we had Life is Beautiful. From Soulja Boy Tellum, an album called The Influence, which, you know, judging by the fact that you probably didn't know this album even came out until I told you about it, yeah, sure, Soulja Boy certainly did tell him. And then, of course, last but certainly not least, the first new Dream Theater album with Mike Portnoy in about a decade or so with Parasomnia. Now, moving a little bit in between dates, on February 11th, we had a couple things here. There was an album called The Exorcism by 8888, which appears to be a collaborative project between The Flowerist and, oh hey, Boldy James! Yeah, this isn't what? Even like the yeah, that this makes at least 4 albums. I missed this one.
Wait, huh? It was 4? It was 40s?
It's okay. I don't blame you. There's a reason you didn't know this happened, because this album, The Exorcism, was a Bandcamp exclusive that costs, and I shit you not here, Mark, I need you to hold on to a guardrail, because this is 100% the price, $880.88.
What? Nani the fuck?
Cost that much? I mean, it's
cheaper than that Wu-Tang album.
So I think he's trolling with that.
Oh, great.
I mean, you can look it up, man. I assure you, I'm not making this up.
You said 88.
The Exorcism on Bandcamp.
Yep, there it is. Good freaking God. Can you at least listen to it for free?
I have no clue. I did not try.
Okay, I'm not gonna look up this. Okay.
What I want to know is if anybody has the audacity to pay out all that and then upload the files on like YouTube or something, because you know someone's tried.
Well then.
Yeah.
I see it. Okay, I see an article of it, which, oh my god, that's no.
Bro, that's more than my share of the rent. Holy fuck. Anyway, aside from that, there's also a Coi Leray EP called What Happened to Forever. Now, moving on to February 14th, 2025, Valentine's Day. Aww. There was a new album from the sludge metal band Mantar with post-apocalyptic depression. Lacuna Coil had their new album called Sleepless Empire. Heh heh, sleep, heh. Alex is right, it really is an epidemic. Holy shit. West Side Gun had a new project out called 12. Drake and Party Next. Now, this album did give us one really good thing, and that was a really good Spectrum Pulse video about it. So thank you for that, Drake. God, that fucking title, though. Anyway, then there was, of course, the new Alessia Cara album, Love and Hyperbole. Then moving in between, before the next Friday, there was, on February 16th, a collab album between Melvins and Napalm Death with Savage Imperial Death March. And a couple days later, physically released at least, it was the new A Day to Remember project, Big Ol' Album Volume 1. The streaming release comes out March 21st, so count that as you will. Then moving on to February 21st, 2025. First up, we had the newest album from extreme death metal act Pissgrave with Malignant Worthlessness. From Killswitch Engage, we had their new album, The Consequence. From Silverstein, we had the double album Anti-Bloom, Pink Moon. From the deathcore band Traitors, we had their new album Phobias. From Roddy Ricch, there was the Navy album. From Ian Dior, there was Nothing's Ever Good Enough 2. From Mike Posner, there was a new album called The Beginning. The beginning of what? The end of your renewed relevance? Anyway. And then from Tate McRae, there was the album So Close to What. Then as we move on, right before February 28th, there was a couple releases on February 27th. First of all, there was Boldy James and Chuck Strangers with Token of Appreciation.
Album number 4.
You know, unless it turns out he released a fifth album that we're not aware of. I'm joking about that. To my knowledge, there's just the 4. And then, of course, from Rebecca Black, we had her new album, Salvation. Now, moving on to February 28th. From the death metal band Vacuous, we had their second studio album, In His Blood. From Cloakroom, we had Last Leg of the Human Table. From Unknown Mortal Orchestra, there was ICO2 Bogota. From Busta Rhymes, we had Dragon Season, Equinox. From Serpent with Feet, we had Grip Sequel. And from former Blackpink singer Lisa, we had her solo debut, Alter Ego. And oh hey, look at that. As soon as I finished saying all that, Boldy James released a 5th album. I thought it was funny.
Man.
So how many albums do we think he's actually going to release before the year is over? Are we thinking like 12? At this rate, might as well be 12. But anyway, suppose now we might as well get into the actual dissection of a few albums here and there. So, of course, as always, we throw it over to Alex to get the ball rolling.
Okay, and as we are entering a new year full of grumblings and bullshit, I have come to realize that my brain isn't quite what it used to be when it comes to listening to music. I just can't find the time for everything. So I'm going to try splitting these up into two sections. Main listens and side listens, which is basically just stuff I listened to once or twice and haven't gone back to, or stuff I tried to listen to but didn't really feel all that invested in. Just to say I did. That way it counts as credits. And, yeah, I'll get started here with this new West Side Gun album, 12. I thought that was all right.
Okay.
It's a good collection of Griselda folks on there. Special mention to the track Adam Page about Hangman Adam Page, who, canonically speaking, burned down a man's house and retired one of his best friends in a very bloody match. So he's got that going on for him. It makes more sense if you don't ask me to explain, but yeah, good, crazy Griselda vibes here. Two sides of the core coin. First, from Ginger, Duel. Prog influence, Ukrainian angst and rage. Yes, always a good time. It's very good, very noodly. It sounds great. I love the mixing and sound and production on here. I just love that ring on the snare drum. The closer we get to the Snapcase snare drum ring, the better off we will all be. And you all know what I'm talking about if you know your late 90s hardcore. Yeah, that's a very good album. Yeah, that's the good side of that coin. The not so good side of that coin is this new Lacuna Coil album, Sleepless Empire, which is most definitely a modern Lacuna Coil album. With a pair of features that feel kind of there. And I don't feel good saying that about a Randy Blythe feature, but he's just there. Where's the presence? Where's the grit? Where's the importance of what this band can do? We're a long ways away from their peak. My God, I don't like it. I don't like it. And for some reason, I wanted to check out this new Killswitch Engage album, This Consequence, and yeah, post-Howard Killswitch is still not great. And on this album especially, the production is just really thin. Like, there's no meat. There's no low end. Everything just sounds thin, and there's just too much. It's just all mids. It's all mids and all highs, barely any lows. And a lot of the guitars just sound buried in the mix. Like, it's too far back. We need that presence up front. You're a metalcore band. Act like it. Well, I always like to mention something from my weird, wild sector of prog music. Scavenging around the Dream Theater subreddit, just because I like to keep informed of, you know, tour videos and set lists and all that stuff, I was informed of a band from Sweden called Inbound. They put out a new album, their first album in almost 10 years, Set It Free. And this probably shouldn't have been in this subreddit, because it's not so much prog metal as much as it is kind of power metal-y. Like, very, you know, triumphant, you know, victorious, rah-rah kind of power metal, which it's very hit or miss with me. But this was mentioned because the closing track features keyboards by one Dr. Kevin Moore. Yeah, formerly at Dream Theater for their first three albums. He left, did a couple other things, became a licensed psychologist, so he is a doctor. He still does music on every now and then, and I listen to it, and it's all right. It's okay. I won't remember it like I will OSI or Chroma Key or early Dream Theater, but sure, cool feature, I guess. I don't know. I'm not too informed with this band, but it wasn't bad. Just not fully my thing. What is my thing, though, is this new Dream Theater album, Parasomnia, which I bought the fancy box set version of. That's $150 right there. So I got it. First time I've ever done it with a Dream Theater album, and of course it had to be the one with Mike Portner coming back into the fold. I have had quite a bit of time to spin this one. I've had to do advanced progonometry to sort of map everything out, because this is an album full of motifs and themes and reprisals and just stuff hidden in the background. It makes you think. That's why I had to really work on my whole active listening skills. But for this album, I did. I'm not sure how it will pan out in the long run, but in the interim, yes, very good. Very, very good. Like, we're back in the groove. It's very nice to have Mike Portnoy on drums with the groove, because seeing a lot of Mike Mangini's drum cam videos, I am convinced he is legitimately insane, because he should not have four brains working with every single limb on his body. Like, that requires a level of finesse and focus that mere mortals cannot comprehend. Like, I can barely get up in the morning without a cup of coffee, and he's doing all this crazy shit with his arms and his feet. I think he was just too good. He was too good. But, yeah, going back to the album, Parasomnia, it is not a narrative concept album. It is a thematic concept album, focusing on different kinds of sleep paralyses and issues and nightmares and all sorts of crazy stuff you can think of when you're dead asleep. Hey, that's a song title. Going track by track, the opening track, In the Arms of Morpheus, as it's called, it's basically just an overture that has a lot of themes that will come back later on in the album up front. It took me a couple listens to get to it, and some read-ups from, you know, Reddit and a fan forum to really piece together everything. And when I got it, I was like, oh, it makes sense now. Okay. Yeah, there are good 8-string riffs on the opening overture, but sadly, not too many. Maybe next time. And that leads into, you know, Night Terror, the lead single. Following that, A Broken Man, which has, I'm going to say, the main theme of the album. It's the chorus melody. that comes back around in a couple places all across the album, especially towards the end. I don't know how they map this out, but I'm impressed. Especially on the next track, Dead Asleep, which has another theme and motif that comes in and out throughout some of the tracks. Which, I'll just explain some of the lyrical themes. Night terror is what you think it is. You know, night terrors, nightmares, all that kind of crap. Broken man is obviously PTSD. Dead Asleep is some kind of wild story about a guy who kills his wife in his sleep, and he sleepwalks. He has no idea how he did it, but apparently he did. He's traumatized by it. There is a twist ending in the song, which I'm not going to spoil, but was not expecting that. It's got a cool key shift in one of the main themes of the album as well. And it's a Midnight Messiah. It's Mike Portnoy putting a whole bunch of lyrical references all over. We already talked about that a couple months ago. Are We Dreaming is the interlude, which has another theme that goes into the final track. It's just a very atmospheric lead out from the previous track and into Bend the Clock, another James LaBrie written song. It's a very good ballad. One of the first true ballads we've heard from Dream Theater in quite a while. With a guitar solo in the end that sounds like what would happen if you combine Guthrie Govan with David Gilmour and just add a whole bunch of John Petrucci licks in it. It's good. A little too good because it fades out in the end. I'm thinking, no, I want more. But that is what it is. And when I was first listening to this album, at this point I was locked in. Ready to go for this closing epic, the Shadow Man Incident, a 19-minute final track. And the first listen, I didn't really love it. It took me a while to get to it. I had to sleep on it a little bit, had to really piece everything together. I had to subdivide the track into five different sections in order to, arrange everything. It's like there's a prelude section at the very start. It has this opening riff and then an Imperial March snare pattern. I think Mike already talked about that in one of his Drumeo videos. There are some themes from the opening overture that come back around to lead into this dark, slow, clean verse melody that builds into this main gallop riff sort of halfway through. It reminds me a bit of In the Presence of Enemies from Systematic Chaos. It just goes back and forth between F sharp and E. Again, there's another vocal melody theme that comes back around into the track in here. And then there's a bridge break, which I have written out here. New riff in A into Metallica riffs and piano. In the Name of God, Latin break. It's a guitar solo in E and drum break. This is how my brain works. I can't explain it. All to lead into the resolution of the track. The final couple minutes was a reprise of the opening riff, just from the key of G to the key of B, to lead into a vocal melody in the key of E with a soaring guitar solo. All to lead into the motif of a broken man in the end, where it feels like a very bombastic, orchestral finale, and it just sort of fades out. And there's an interesting bit of samples in this track and in Midnight Messiah. From the film Waking Life, it's by the man who made Boyhood and A Scanning Darkly, Richard Linklater, I think is that his name?
Yeah,
Richard. Him. I think he also did School of Rock.
I believe so. Let me just check really quick. Yeah, he did direct that one. But Waking Life is one of those sort of rotoscoped movies, again, like A Scanner Darkly. Again, there's talks about, dreams, what is awake, what is not. Are we even here on this plateau? Are we even awakened to begin with? Is this really, our domain, or is this the land of the dead? I've heard it's a really good movie. I should check it out. But good use of samples on here. And it comes back around in this the closing minutes of the album, where you hear sort of a tick, 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 tick of like a clock with some background noise. And then you hear from the movie the words, "Wake up." Interesting to note, that happens at the timestamp 1928. I see what you did there, you sneaky sons of bitches. So yeah, I really enjoyed this album. Though there, I do have one kind of critical critique about it, is that the bass presence isn't as strong as it was on the previous album. I just need a little more bass in the mix. Maybe it was their choice, I don't know, but it felt a little too mushed down with the rest of the low end on the drums and guitars. But other than that, thumb up. Big thumb up from me. Of course, we have one album we'll talk about later on together, which I will have some theories about when we get there. Yes. Oh, I also want to mention I did buy a vinyl copy of GNX because I had to. Come on.
Nice. All right. So that takes care of the first third or fourth, however you want to call it, and now to the second third fourth with Mark.
Yeah, so around my picks, I got plenty of them. I have, we'll see, not counting the one we're going to review later on, I have 11. I have 10. Would have been 11, but I cut one out because I didn't have much to say about that one. And also found that one was a December release that had a deluxe edition that came that month. I could talk about that one Rock Marshall and Aquas project, but I got top of that, which by the way, yeah, it's good shit, by the way. Anyway, I got these 10 projects out of the time into three parts. Why? Because you kind of already figure why. So, let's get started with, these will be long. These will be kind of short because I'm getting older, I'm starting to realize that I don't have much to say on most things, so I'm just going to keep them short and sweet. Yeah. Okay, first up, Mike with Showbiz. Yeah, this was a last-minute pick because, well, I didn't know about it until, well, Rob announced it during the recordings, and I say, okay, good album it is, and this is 12-1. Like, 12-1, and... You know, for the past few years, he's been talking consistently for, you know, we've had this and been consistently interesting. And of course, you know, Mike still go for that more that lo-fi hip hop with dusty R&B and other world music samples in there, which yeah, you gotta sit to hear. And this is also one is 24 tracks, but it's 47 minutes. Like the tracks are real short, just so you know. So like a Mad Villainy type thing, wink wink. But yeah, I'll say this: there's a lot of tracks that I like more on here than his previous albums. Like the vibes remind me of how chill it is and how it runs on vibes. Sometimes you get what you need, like because you know Mike on the mic. Okay. Anyway, he's got some of those worst selling lyrics about his life, his peers, own status, and rap game surroundings. Like one track I like this album is one called "Man in the Mirror," which is very, very simple. It's super short, but I kind of like high rapping on beats. Work is kind of good. Like, I can definitely buy this shit. Like, it just sounds great on here. Like, it's an easy recommend to, you know, some, you know, hip hop heads that, you know, want to go outside the box. Like, you know, basically, you go to alternative shit in there. There's one. Right. Next up, FKA Twigs. You Sexua. Why does it sound like something you hear from Futurama? It sounds something I would have heard Zach Brannigan say. I don't know. I just thought about that.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that episode not too long ago. I have a very sexy learning disability. What's it called, Kif? Eusexua.
Now I know what color, even though, I mean, just from AKA Twigs, I think she might have got from, I don't know, maybe she made a shit. I don't know. Anyway, like, according to her, is her own term, describes the state of being that she's in the pinnacle of human experience, or referred to a feeling of transcendence that can be brought on by art, music, sex, and unity. Okay, yeah, and then again, we'll explain that last project of hers, Capra Songs, which I thought was pronounced Capri Songs, but no, it's not. It's Capra Songs. Is that my father for a drink? Okay, anyway. Anyway, here's this album a couple of times. The theme of sex is not lost in here, but I can feel the very, you know, electro part, avant-garde, techno sound, and I admit, I was kind of lukewarm on that at first. I mean, I didn't hate him, but it's like, it was okay. It was a chicken listen. Like, the single Jones of Death, as I kind of did like the sound effects on here, which, I kind of did that a bit. Of course, there's tracks like Sticky, not that one. And, also, like that one, Striptease, 24 Hour Dog, Perfect Stranger, and Rule of Fools was like, those are pretty good tracks. However, you get the one lone vocal feature on a song, Childlike Things, which is, well, okay. The lone feature here is Northwest. Yes, you heard me.
What?
You heard me. That Northwest. Which on here, who raps in Japanese and English, and yeah. And you know what? I'm not going to mention the guy's name because I don't want to, and I'm not going to. So I will say she's not too shabby here. It's like, she's fine here. That's all I can say. I'm not going to say she's great or anything. It's like, she's there. She's fine. I'm going to move on now. So yeah, the album is fine. Like, samples have the last mixtape or album, whatever. And that was okay too. Once again, like a bigger, it's a decent album. It's worth a listen. Next up, Mac Miller, Bluterism. Yes, we are at the second posthumous album since his passing of, you know, from, you know, around almost seven years ago. Damn. And, you know, and of course, you know, the whole deal with posthumous albums, like, sometimes they did the discussion on the late artist's legacy or make everything from the library. Thankfully, that's not the case of Mac Miller, because, like, they actually take good care of how to do things, like, take their time, like, cause, you know, like, the last album of his we got was 5 years ago in 2020. You know, the 2020 before everything went through, And of course, this release was recorded around 2014 when his mixtape Face was released. Like, of course, you know, there's like a early SZA feature, like very early SZA. Of course, around the time when Max on the, you know, on the, you know, exit out of his, you know, frat rap thing and go to more experimental psychedelic jazz, psychedelic hip hop and jazz, given like when you got somebody like, did it continue as a given considering you got somebody like Thundercat on the budget and no one has a relationship with him? You know, you gotta make Thundercat and Mac Boys, you gotta make the best of it. And of course, you got, well, him and his brother, Ronald Bruno Jr. and Jamel Bruno, aka Kentaro. Yes. Yes, my brother's name is Kentaro. I don't know what anime that from, but it just sounds like you'd be for one. Anyway. That one has a lot of, you know, mellow, jazzy, and vibey feel. It's like what I the movie New Mac Miller, we're going to sit in the circles, and given that it's into 2014, I mean, he probably was doing this shit just to say, you know, when I just go, like, you know, which had here, you know, before it happened, which, again, it's interesting that he does experiment. It's sad knowing that while we got to hear different sounds, he would try, like, to hear anything else from new to him, but it's good to have something for him again, even though he's moved on to the upper room. Tracks I would like it is Miss Devil Downer, Stone, and Funny Papers. It's a good album. I don't know if this is the last we ever hear from him. Probably might be, I don't know. But as long as they're not just, you know, not just cashing out shit, they can good job of him releases. I can say that, yeah. Okay, next up. Now, this next one is probably going to be very, very short, because this one is a cutting up demos of an album that we knew 20 years ago. Yeah, it's Matt Villain. Matt Villainy Demos.
Oh.
Yeah, it's basically the demo collection of, you know, basically the album that pretty much every hip-hop nerd, every nerdy hip-hop fanatic knows, including us. You basically instrumentals of songs like Bistro, instrumentals like that, Lifesaver, aka Mint Test, it's basically, you know, hearing what it said before the real thing came out. And also, I would say get a listen if you want to go more into Matt Villain stuff. And then also show Matt Villain some love in some way, if you can. See what happened to him, the January, which, yeah, that still sucks. Now going to February, and February, now the other since February, Larry June, 2 Chainz, and The Alchemist, Life is Beautiful. Yeah, it's him again, but this time we have 2 Chainz to join them. And also, first album he released since he left Def Jam last year, he's now a free agent. And I can admit, I feel the 2 Chainz to me could be pretty hit or miss. Again, I like some of his albums, like Trap Music and Red Go to the Lane, but that's it regarding that. I only have some solid verses time to time, and other rappers have done before. Now, we all know that Larry June and 2 Chainz got, you know, very different rapping styles. Like, you know, 2 Chainz for that energetic delivery flow, and on Trap Music, Larry June is more, you know, lush, relaxed, luxurious, all that shit that we all know from the albums that he put out. And of course, for things he put out, it's like, yeah, this is kind of decent. Like, yeah, 2 Chainz can't, like, I've been saying it the longest. I do think 2 Chainz can deliver good verses here and there. I'm not somebody, I'm not sticking my neck out for him, but it's like, yeah, these are pretty good verses. And I will say for the albums, they're pretty much, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, this is good. It's good. I mean, it's basically what I heard. What I heard from Larry from The Escape, and the last one I listened from him. But yeah, it's pretty good. It got sounds very relaxed. The vibes are magnificent. How luxurious and chilly it is, and there's a couple of missing beats in it. 2 Chainz sounds great on. Like, he has shown us that he can spit and look. Yes, this is basically a sugar fair between just those two, no features. Just Larry June and 2 Chainz and Alchemist production, and that's all. Like, it's not spectacular, but I still say it's solid. For me to listen to. Check out Light, Bad Choices, Generation, and Money Cannon. Now for West Side Gun with 12. The Hermes series. Yes, that's it, Hermes, because that's what it's called, because that's what the original title implied. Anyway, since we got the double chop from him a couple months back with 11 is still praying, and now we have 12. It's just another, I'm guessing, mixtape album project. I don't know. If I find it's called 12, there's only 11 tracks on it. Well, technically 10 in the intro of it. And of course, like it goes on, like he does have mostly, you know, people in the background. Like, it's basically a West Side Gun project with a Stove God Cooks and Easty Knack rapping alongside him. People like Bernard Tom Souls, who I recognize from the last album he did. This is like if I made an album and I put you two on there and we get somebody from Podcast 1A to do some other features. I don't know. Yeah, it's basically, let's say, I don't know, Robin's Easty Neck and Ox of Stove God Cooks.
Huh.
I'll take it.
Okay. And And who do you know can be brought down souls? I don't know, find somebody. But like I said, it's one of that. Yeah, it's one of those albums where, of course, like what, of course, like, wow. We hear West Side Gun. Those three definitely make, you know, it's like a joint album, kind of maybe. But again, it's never out of the ordinary for me, but still get a kick out of it. Like, it's your very usual Griselda album with, you know, more the grimier style, Dutch, with people like Dr. Williams, Derringer, Dan LaFlair, Mr. Green, among others. Like, I kind of just want more than the previous two records we put a couple of months back, but I kind of found it all right. And I will say, Health Science, East Miami, and actually, Adam Page. Yeah, I like that track too. Okay, and this one I checked out of curiosity because I recognize, because since you mentioned GNX, one of the features out there, one of them is Doty Six. I decided, you know what, why don't I check out you know, somebody from looking to one of the projects, and they got a new album out, 36 with Doty World Night Shift. I will say this, if you like your West Coast rap with an interesting flow with some banging beats, yeah, this is for you. Like, this one knows you gotta be the no, you gotta be the no crowd in terms of your West Coast hip hop, because like, I'll be honest, I don't see many people outside of the West Coast turning to this because it's not, well, you know who, but it's a fun record. Like, I don't know, hey, but it's a good listen. I didn't say that, but yeah, I can say it. It was a good listen. Oh, by the way, if you wonder who the fuck we're talking about, 46, he was on the track Hey Now on GNX, just to clarify. And now for the albums I did skip because, well, let's be honest, yeah, you gotta know what is coming. Three Boney James albums. It would have been four. except I'm not paying almost $1,000 to listen to one. So yeah, we got three albums, that being Murder During Drug Traffic with Rich Gaines, Permanent Ink, and let's see, Token Appreciation with Chuck Strangers. I will say this, they both got some different styles to it, kind of. Like, of course, like, this is, of course, him going back to Rich Gaines, who joined before on a project like Indiana Jones back in 2023, which, that's the same year he had his car accident in, which, that was unfortunate, which, maybe that's the reason why he's like, well, after 2013, he didn't really do much on that front, which you kind of get why he said, yeah, I'm going to release it month after. Yeah, I think it's gonna get why he's doing this shit, but okay. But yeah, we'll say this for him. Okay, first for Murder During Drug Traffic, we'll say if something matter is remains more the same, like more the, you know, street like crime shit, and still doing his usual monotone voice, and understand more than he's a guitar driven style Rich Gaines to me. Like, I can see myself going comedy tracks, but not as much. Like, I like tracks like Stay Mute. It has that very menacing and eerie beat driving that makes it one of the most shaking tracks on there. Second would be Made Men and Stacks and Flips. And Mr. Album does some of the usual Boy James bread and butter. While I say Stick to Your Guns can work sometimes, it can be a bit repetitive. Like, it's still a good album. Like, I mean, I enjoy it from what I listen to, but yeah, I will say this, like, if you want to mix it up, well, I'll say it's Permanent Ink. That's when you're thinking, wow, this is definitely different than what I'm used to. Because it sounds definitely like the past ones he made. Of course you heard a single Foul Line, which has more of that, it has more of a mainstream, supposed like a 2000 soulful kind of beat to it, produced by early Kanye. And, because we're just handled by a production entity called Royal House Recordings. I still don't know who the fuck they are, and I guess this album was trying to go with some mainstream appeal that got more of that trap sounds that most Detroit-based rappers would use. I mean, it's interesting to look at him because, well, he goes outside his boss's usual thing, I mean, the album is short. You go to the 31 minutes, clock it, and it checks like two minutes each. Like Long Check being here is on longest check on here is 2 minutes and 48 seconds. Of course, the checks are like were Chili Mo, Don Mega, and Jacksonville, and No Facade. Like I will say for Corona Inc. Like, yeah, it's a bit of a switch, but I can definitely appreciate it. And of course, the latest one that I can listen to is Morty James and Chuck Strangers Token Appreciation. Now, of course, Chuck Strangers, we know him, like he's a rap producer known for the member of the Collective Pro Era. That's the crew that's, you know, with Joey Badass, Capital Steez, Nick Caution, Kirk Knight. Yes, they also have do a duo called Nick at Night. Yeah. Okay, now with this album, I will say this. While the past two have some different things going for it, I will say this one I kind of like the most. Mainly because this one has more of an ill hip hop appeal to me than man, like from the Dusty Soul Set production. Like, I mean, there's nothing new to say here, but because I'm like a broken record here, it's like. It's like before, I like this more time style rapping. I like the storytelling. I like how much fun he is. So it's like how, it's like, yeah, this happened, that happened. Yeah, this way of life. I know. It'd be great. Okay, yeah. And yeah. Like I say, this may sound short, but yeah, I like, out of the three records that I listened to so far, this one's might be my favorite so far. But who knows? Maybe more to come. He might make another album with somebody. Like, who knows? Might do another Alchemist project or something. And you know what? The more I think about it, who want to collaborate with again? Which I heard from a while. Him and Jay Versace. What happened to him? Yeah, because good question. I mean, yeah, because last thing with Jay Versace was the Versace tape that was released. Also in 2020, go he do something with him again if it all goes well, but I don't, who knows, but yeah. So yeah, that's my 2 months. That's all 10 albums. You know the drill. I got one more, but you already know what is coming. So yeah, I'm gonna take a swig of this drink that I did not steal from Rob. So yeah.
You motherfucker. Now, with that out of the way, time to get into some albums on my own end. I'm not really sure I have any kind of precursor for it, so I'm just going to jump right in with my tried and true structure, starting with my top recommendations, of which I have two. So let's talk about Vacuous, first of all, which is this pretty new up-and-coming band in the death metal scene. Like, their first album was in 2021, and they just released their second album, In His Blood, which I only found out about from reading a blog called Toilet of Hell, which has some pretty interesting metal reviews and a pretty funny podcast, all things considered. So, two albums in, these guys are definitely the real deal. Their style falls into that very, like, cavernous death metal production style, one that I tend to speak about quite positively here. It just scratches a nice itch for me, you know, bands like Tomb Mold, Blood Incantation, Vastum, Sivirus, etc. But I think what helps Vacuous stand on their own 2 feet is that they definitely have more of like a thrashier edge to things here. Like, songs can have a pretty breakneck pace with plenty of double kicks on full blast, the sticking patterns, you know, going between D-beats, blasts, and some nice grooves, keeping up that momentum in a really satisfying way. Like, if I had to compare it to any other bands, it kind of has like that sort of death, blackened thrash energy as bands like Goat Whore or Skeleton Witch combined in with those more cavernous instincts. I don't have much further to say beyond that other than this is a pretty heavy listen, and this is definitely a band to keep an eye out on if you have not already caught wind of them, you know, for all you death metal heads out there. And then for my other top pick, there's going to be a lot more to say because there's a bit of a yarn to spin here. All right, so about a couple months ago, my partner in our chat was telling me, oh, hey, there's this one album you should check out. And Of course, it's one that had a bit of discourse going around it, that being the new Ethel Kane project, Perverts. So, of course, just to warm up, I listened to, you know, her previous releases. She had a few EPs, and then her 2022 debut album, Preacher's Daughter, and then started learning more about the behind the scenes of her career and general reception, which is what a lot of this yarn is going to be about. Okay, so, just for context, her debut full-length, Preacher's Daughter, dropped around 2022, and while I only checked it out this year, I was pretty impressed. It had a really great mix of, like, dark pop, folk, Americana, and other kinds of similar genre ideas, mixed into this very lengthy concept record about, well, the daughter of a preacher, you know, running away from home. The album as a whole offered a lot of, like, really dark lyrical thematic motifs from, like, the toxicity of the Christian religion, multi-generational trauma, sexual abuse, and several criticisms of American culture, too, while we're at it. And apparently, from what I've seen, a lot of this might be coming from first-hand knowledge and experience, unfortunately. Yeah. In fact, to put this in kind of weeb terms, although I'm not sure how much this is going to land with the present company, anybody listening, have you ever read a manga series called Goodnight Pun Pun?
I think I know what you're alluding to.
Yeah, because, like, as I was listening to that record, the very first thing that came to mind was the character of Aiko Tanaka. Because, like, she was also a character that, like, her mother was in a fucking cult, and what she only really escaped because she got into this really ungodly toxic relationship with the titular Pun Pun character. By the way, to anybody who's never read that manga, it's really compelling, but it's a very bleak read, so I think you gotta be in a very specific mood to read it, but yeah, it's an indisputable manga masterpiece. Anyway, so what I was finding out about the record behind the scenes was that, yes, it was very acclaimed when it came out, but apparently there was, like, this really bizarre part of, like, the fandom that was kind of, for to put it bluntly, kind of clowning and memeing on it to some extent. I only put it like that because last year, Kane had penned a blog post specifically criticizing the obnoxious trends of irony poisoning that you see a lot in artistic discourse from people who think they're too good to sincerely engage with art on its own terms. Now, keep in mind, I didn't find this out until after listening to the album, which, again, I only listened this year, but when I was looking back and I'm like, really? That album is what you make memes for? That's just weird to me. Like, if this was Scaring the Hose, I'd at least get it. Because that's an album that seems like it facilitates that kind of mindset. You know, not the least of which because Danny Brown and JPEG kind of wear themselves, but I digress. And, anyway, I feel like a lot of that was still weighing on her mind when she came out with this new project. Because, I need you to know that this is technically, she technically called it an EP, but it's 90 minutes. And it's only 9 tracks. And it's definitely far less commercial in its construction than Preacher's Daughter. Like, there's a couple of instances of actual instrumentation, like, you know, some lengthy guitars and maybe a somber piano piece or two. But otherwise, the majority of the album is a lot of this dark, ambient, slowcore kind of material. Eschewing any sense of structure for just kind of freeform drone sounds and a lot of this, like, a lot of these very odd vocal constructions, like, it can kind of go back and forth if you're paying attention to it, and you kind of have to be paying attention to notice, between, like, these sort of pseudo-philosophical, like, ruminations on, like, love and life and religion and romance, and often these very, like, short, looping, repetitious phrases just repeated over the course of, like, a 15-minute song, let's say. And a lot of this feels very deliberate in the sense that, okay, I'm very tempted to agree with Apple Music's assessment that this feels like an album that was made to weed out the parts of her fan base that she was criticizing with that blog post. Because, like I said, the lyrical subject matter, if you're paying attention, in a way it is thematically similar to Preacher's Daughter. A lot of discomforting passages about, like, trauma, love, sex, religious enlightenment, the various intersection of these things. But it's presented with the minimalist sounds of, like, droning, sludgy guitars, almost kind of like a Sun-O song, piano keys and a lot of odd buzzing noise. Like, much as I hate to borrow observations from elsewhere, if you listen to some of this stuff long enough, it honestly sounds like it's the sound of, like, a vibrator or other similar kinds of sex toys. Which makes sense, because again, with the sexual motifs and the very odd subdued vocal passages, the only way I can kind of describe the feel of this record is that it's kind of like you're eavesdropping on the sound of someone masturbating. And like I said, that is a very deliberately discomforting thing. Like, to put it in another anime comparison, it kind of reminds me of, like, the difference between Preacher's Daughter and this kind of reminds me of the difference between the last two episodes of the Evangelion TV show and the end of Eva. The latter, you know, being the perverts of the scenario, taking the subject matter of what came before and presenting it in a much more uncomfortable, deliberately off-putting fashion as kind of like a piss-off to certain people who didn't like, who couldn't be bothered to engage with the previous material on its own terms. We'll see what happens later from here. Like I said, if I come to a conclusion here, it's that it's a very difficult record to, like, recommend someone to listen to, but it is kind of very compelling if you're willing to engage with it on that wavelength. But I'm also curious what happens now that, like, those parts of the fandom are possibly out. Because Preacher's Daughter was actually supposed to be part of a trilogy of records, and she still plans on doing that at some point, so we shall see. But yeah, if you're looking for something really off the beaten path that kind of takes, like, a lot to engage with, here you go. Man, this is gonna sound really weird out of context if my roommates were eavesdropping, but anyway. So now we're gonna go into the quick round material, stuff that I may like or dislike to varying degrees, but I don't have much to say about, so these first three, of course, were already very much talked about. So, Boldy James and Rich Games with Murder During Drug Traffic and Boldy James's Permanent Ink. I mean, Boldy James sounds pretty great on both of them. The obvious difference is kind of in the production. Like, Boldy James, the Drug Traffic album, I'd say sounds more like a Boldy James record, whereas a lot of Permanent Ink has a lot of pretty more straightforward, kind of just most rap songs trap beats on it. Again, he sounds good on both of them. It's just a matter of preference. I think I prefer Drug Traffic more. And then, of course, there's Dream Theater's Parasomnia. The return of Mike Portnoy, you know, making this a very big occasion. And, yeah, of course, Alex already covered the bulk of it. That, like, as you could probably guess from the name, it's a very general thematic conceit about, like, people going through various kinds of sleep-related distress and disturbances. From sleepwalking murder to the scary figures, the shadows in the corner of the room. The Hat Man, because he took too much Benadryl or something. And it occurs to me, like, it's kind of like, yeah, presented with a lot of samples and this kind of very theatrical sort of sense to it. But it's also about, like, sleep and dreams. So that makes this album a literal dream theater. Hey!
Only took him 39 years to do that.
Yeah, but, you know, better late than never. So I do like it. I'm curious about, again, kind of what comes afterwards, just because, like, this is obviously, like, the guys kind of getting their bearings back together after, you know, Mike Portnoy coming back in, and I think I recall him saying somewhere that there were some differences in the writing process from when he was first in Dream Theater to when he rejoined, because obviously when he left, they brought Mike Mangini in, and that obviously facilitates a lot of switch-ups and things. That's just how it happens a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think he mentioned that in the Drumeo videos as well. He took a bit of a step back, mostly in, like, the production side of things. So that's more of John Petrucci still made now. But to quote him, what he said himself, he was a bit of a control freak. He has since cooled off on all that.
Fair enough. By the way, speaking of Drumeo stuff, this is a bit of a tangent, but I was reading something about, like, the guy who plays bass live for Taylor Swift, and apparently he's a Dream Theater fan, which makes that one Mike Portnoy Drumeo video even funnier.
It's all connected one way or another.
Har har. Anyway, now moving on to stuff that no one has talked about so far, so Pissgrave. Yeah, Pissgrave, that's a band name. Album number 3, Malignant Worthlessness. And the only way I can explain their sound to the present company using bands that we have talked about before is, imagine Imperial Triumphant, but without the melodic jazzy nuances. So just the pure, frenetic, brutal, in-your-face discordance with vocals that sound like they're being, like the sound of like a barking animal being flattened out in the mix and everything. So, it's solid enough for its genre. It definitely is very relentless and just full-on rage and in-your-face. The vocal production just isn't my thing. Like I said, it's a bit flat and I kind of need something more, like bellow or punch. That's just me. I'm a nitpicky headcase, though. The band Stick to Your Guns. I actually binged their discography recently, so yeah, that includes this new one, Keep Planting Flowers. It's their shortest album so far, but it keeps things pretty punchy without being overly redundant. Even if the guest feature from CU Space Cowboy is an immediate candidate for poorly aged things. Yeah, keep in mind, this album came out January, like the first couple weeks of January.
That's unfortunately terrible timing.
Anyway, moving on to the new Franz Ferdinand album, The Human Fear. There are many albums that will come out this year, and this was certainly one of them. Anyway, Rebecca Black, her new album Salvation. Tell me that your favorite album that came out last year was Brat without telling me your favorite album last year was Brat. Not that I'm saying that is necessarily a bad thing. I just think it's really funny that this album is just, what, like, it's only 7 tracks, but it is 100% Brat Summer is Eternal. And honestly, it kind of slaps. No, I'm not saying that as a joke or ironic. Like, there's some fun bops on this thing. And finally, to allude to my beginning opening statement of the podcast, the greatest Christmas album you will ever hear and my new tradition, the Cusack Creatures Christmas album. Yes, as in Michael Cusack of YOLO and Smiling Friends fame. He made a Christmas album. And if you think that's strange, you should actually listen to it, because it's not like, you know, corny takes on old Christmas classics with the excess of jingle bells, although jingle bells are definitely there. Stylistically, this album actually has a lot of, like, upbeat garage rock mixed with downbeat grungy alternative jams about various Christmas topics, or miscellaneous stuff like how cartoons are cool, and how Santa needs to stop being a bitch and pay his goddamn elves. So yeah, it's weirdly listenable if that's your thing. Like, it kind of feels like if you got the really weird kids who worked at your college radio station to make a Christmas album. So if I made a Christmas album. I know who I am as a person. And that's it for the quick round. So now we have my two lowlights to discuss here. Funnily enough, both differing flavors of nu metal deathcore cringe. So, I don't know why I listened to this Paleface Swiss album Cursed. You just make weird decisions sometimes. And the thing is, on a surface level, I should at least enjoy it a tiny bit, because these guys absolutely worship, like, self-titled Iowa-era Slipknot, which makes me want to give it slight props, because at least it has, like, actual fucking riffs and shit. But where the album kind of loses me mainly is the vocals. And I'll admit, I kind of feel bad picking on the vocalist, because in case you can't tell from the name, this band is in fact Swiss. So even when there's like the aggressive shouts and screams, the accent is coming through pretty prominently. But I'm sorry, when it got to a track with a trap beat and the dude actually rapping, there was no coming back for that. That shit's cringe, man. That just makes it sound really silly. Although I should comment that at least I recognize that Paleface Swiss album and could pick it out from a lineup, whereas Phobias, this new album from Traitors, is very bleh. Now keep in mind, I only listened to this band out of curiosity because they're one of the featured bands on this year's Warped Tour, you know, the big 30th anniversary, so I kind of wanted to check out what they were about. And they are really dull. Like, just a lot of mid-tempo songs that monotonously chug one or two chords, maybe a slight melody here and there, and generic guttural vocals. Like, it's already generic on its own. But when 2025 saw fit to have one of the major veterans of the genre show us all how it's really fucking done, that just makes this inexcusable. And you'll find out more about that next month. And that is about all that. So now we have to do our big group discussion. And if you know the history of this podcast, you will not be surprised in the slightest. Once more, for old time's sake, let's talk about The Weeknd. So, of course, one of the first big pop releases out of the gate, well, okay, it got delayed out of a week, but you know what I mean, was The Weeknd with his new project, Hurry Up Tomorrow. And there's certainly a lot you could say in the preamble. It's the final of a trilogy that started with After Hours and continued into Dawn FM. His final album under the moniker of The Weeknd. And also there's kind of there's a lot of, if we're looking at it, a lot of weird stuff. Like, just a weird spot this album kind of occupies. Because, like, okay, we all loved Dawn FM and it was successful. But I don't think it had quite as much of a commercial blowout as, like, After Hours did.
Yeah.
That's kind of the you know, risk-reward of making an album that's just a little bit left of center for the mainstream, and it's the ways that it was.
Yeah.
Then, of course, there was the... sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, in case you can remember that, the album got beat up by fucking Gunwale people.
Oh, God.
Okay. Yeah, I will add to this. After Hours was the commercial success. Dawn FM was the critical success. Like, I went back to listen to Dawn FM. I forgot just how good it actually is. Like, that is a creative high point. That is a creative peak, which kind of put this album in a weird place, because how do you top that?
Yeah.
Well, you certainly don't top it by making a mediocre one-season HBO drama series.
Yeah,
there was that too, which is like, the idol came and went and was pretty much just an unambiguous L. Like, even his biggest stans have to admit that, yeah, no, this wasn't it.
This ain't good. No, take it back. Like, okay, well.
And then, of course, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Like, I'm gonna say, like, yeah, for me, was it the worst thing I saw? No, but it still sucks.
Yeah, not good. And then, of course, there was the big incident in 2022, you know, that one show that kind of served as the impetus for making this new album, where, while in the middle of a show, or rather right before he went on stage, his voice completely gave out, which means he had to cancel. Not exactly a fun thing to do when you're a name as big as The Weeknd. Yeah, so that's ultimately all, like, kind of the backstory for where we are with Hurry Up Tomorrow. Not to mention there's a movie on the way soon in May.
Yeah.
But, of course, we gotta deal with the album first. And even this album cycle was kind of in a super weird state of flux. Like,
yeah.
For the, like, I'll bring this up now. The other thing that I kind of have to know, so I'll bring up later, but, like, the album cover changed kind of just randomly. Like the first was this really, you know, obviously, like, professional headshot of him, which I think is actually still, like, his profile photo if you go to see him on, like, Spotify or Apple Music.
It's also the cover of the first pressing, which we'll come around to.
Which then got switched to an album and font that looks like it was just, like, randomly taken out of context.
Yeah,
like wherever that all that can't happen.
I was like, he's constipated.
Oh, the way. Oh, yeah.
He's on the toilet or some shit. Like the way. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, oh yeah, I remember that face. That's the face I made when I thought it was a good idea to get a double cheeseburger from Wawa last night.
I regret that to loop. And those crunch wraps.
The face of someone trying the face of someone trying Chipotle for the first time.
No, it's not as good as Moe's. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Fucking love Moe's. Yes. But anyway, enough jokes about Mexican food. Let's actually get to the album itself, because even if we, like... So, even factoring all that in mind, to be fair, the album does start on a pretty solid note. Wake Me Up is a pretty good opener.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A.K.A. Mainly because it's, like, the most Michael Jackson-ass song that Abel's ever made. Like,
thank you, Justin.
Is
that an actual Michael Jackson sample? Or just an interpolation?
I can pull it up for you. Let me just... go all the way down here. Samples. Yes, there is a little bit of Thriller in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew, like, I recognized that somewhere.
And
you know, the production from Justice and everything definitely makes it sound good.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is fucking amazing. And what a way to start out with. Also produced by Justice. Also produced by, you know, himself, Mike Dean, and Johnny Jewel. Yeah, that one.
From Chromatics?
Yes, that guy.
I was wondering what he's been up to.
This half the events of a movie opening. Like, the way it starts up with the slow, ominous build. Which sounds like open to Scarface. We'll get that in a moment. But yeah, the way it builds up to this, of course, very Michael Jackson ass stylized pop disco jam, which does get you hyped up like this. It just sounds amazing.
Yeah, so off to a good start, and things still get pretty good when we have a Cry For Me, which has a lot of like these very like abrasive synth bursts in the opening before a lot of the darker melodies start overtaking things in the production. So yeah, not. All right, we're already getting the ball rolling. Things are sounding pretty solid.
I think the two starting tracks I like the most, because the way Cry For Me just from the synths to the trap beat, which also part which credit due to Metro Boomin, which it goes hard when it drops. Like, when you hear that shit, it's like, and then the beat just jump, like, it just hits, man. I'm just like, man, this is pretty good. I'm loving this.
Sounding good. Then we get one of the first interludes, that being, I Can't Fucking Sing.
Which, of course, yes, that leads to the, you know, the aforementioned, thing that happened back then.
Yeah, and then that gives us third single from the album, Sao Paulo, which... You know, having listened to that single a few times and then re-listened to the album, I think this wound up being the one that grew on me, just because, again, it all comes down to that really, like, hard-stabbing syncopated bass synth. Like, that shit fucking rules.
Yeah, this one grew on me, too.
I just want to mention this really quick. As a deeper album piece, it works. It builds a mood, it builds a setting, it builds, like, a narrative beat. This should not have been a single. This should have absolutely not been a single. Not just because it tanked. It only peaked at number 43, but this just doesn't have a lot of what I would call single potential. Not like a lot of the tracks from After Hours and Dawn FM did. And that's kind of one of my issues with this album as a whole. There just isn't a lot of... single potential. You have Cry For Me, that it did become a single, like, after the album was released, which, hey, that's good. Top 15, very cool, very good. But aside from that, maybe a couple songs in here could have worked as singles, but in the build-up to release, this just gave off a very wrong impression of what it was going to be. That's just my take. I just don't think this works as a single.
I think I get your point. Like that.
Yeah.
There's a balance to be struck here. Like, you can understand the album sentiment, but there could still be, like, you know, singles and stuff that really hit. Like, I mean, I do still like Sao Paulo. Like, that. This is one of my, like, top cuts from the record. But now that you mention it, it does kind of raise a point. Like, brief tangent. Like, I listened to this album a few times. It took me an embarrassingly long amount of time to realize Dancing with the Flames isn't on here.
Yeah, I went back to listen to that. Yeah, I think I know why it got cut. The whole mood of it just didn't really fit with the rest of the album. I don't know what changed. I don't know when it changed, but it became kind of clear that a lot of the major key melodies on that track just didn't really fit on here. Like, it didn't even make the cut as like a bonus track on one of the three other versions. So,
Yeah, it's a weird place because, like, something you're going to notice, like, okay, so after that track, we kind of get into another intermission called Until We're Skin and Bones, which, again, I'm pretty sure is an OPN piece. And then we get Baptized in Fear, a song whose title is pretty self-explanatory. You know, it's his personal demons, you know, getting to him, you know, the cost of fame, the life he's been living, how all of that is just kind of bearing down on him now. And it's just, like, obviously a lot to deal with. And, yeah, it's just very, like, again, saying that, I can get why Dancing in the Flames didn't make it. It kind of doesn't make sense with the motif, but then it makes you wonder, why make that song at all?
Apple?
Yeah, Apple.
Okay. Yeah, like, that was used as, like, an iPhone promotional piece, but, you know, whatever. Like, that, just as a side point to all this, in terms of, like, all the songwriters credited on the album, Max Martin is just sort of stuck in the middle in here. And you never want Max Martin, of all people, being stuck in the middle.
That's kind of an interesting observation, because I was about to mention the song Open Hearts, where he's credited, and that's one of, another one of, like, if there's any really great cuts from this album, that's it.
Yeah, like
honestly, the synths kind of sound like Carpenter Brute to me. Which they need to put out a new album already, goddammit. But yeah, honestly, that beat just kind of hits for me. That particular, like, synth wave type of production.
Yeah. It seems like that track, Open Hearts, I think that could have been super potential, but I don't know. Maybe because it has that, you know, that X Martin style of pop. And I feel like, I mean, it could have worked, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I bought some stuff from Don Effort Award where it could work as a single, but it never got released there. But that's just me. I don't know.
Yeah, and then of course we get another song, Reflections Laughing, which, again, is kind of like The Weeknd having to confront, like, the darker sides of his fame, quite literally, like, this inner demon that's, like, tempting him towards, like, these more sinful and self-destructive impulses, with the, you know, demonic sort of entity being portrayed by one Travis Scott.
That sort of makes sense!
This reminds me of how nondescript Travis Scott is as a musical entity. Honestly, I still can't believe that's his, like, state. I know it sounds like I'm ripping off a Todd in the Shadows bit, but seriously, you went to pick a stage name, and all you did was pick some dude's name. What the fuck?
Yeah, just a reminder, his real name is Jacques Webster.
Jacques Bermon Webster II, of all names. Yeah.
Oh, that is a name that absolutely got swirled.
And also you hear Florence and the Machine on there as well. Well, in the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a solid enough touch. I do like me some Florence. And then moving on from there, another song that I have to note is Enjoy the Show. You know, a song about alcohol and drug fueled self destruction, specifically about how, like, all that, again, is kind of weighing on him and probably has already shortened his life expectancy past, like, you know, the fucking point of no return. And, of course, because it's a song about drug-fueled excess, we have a future guest spot on here. And I will give credit, I did think it was clever to use the lyric, "I can't feel my face," you know, as a callback to that classic song. But otherwise, I still don't get the appeal of Future. I'm sorry.
I mean,
in comparison to who's coming up, let it slide.
You will get to that. I will say, it's like, even though Future hasn't been my thing, it's like, I mean, I kind of see it, but I'm like, I'm still my hand to it. It's like, I can sort of see it here, kind of.
All right, so where exactly does that take us next?
It takes us to the breaking point of giving up on me, which I will lead into with my thoughts of how this works as a quote-unquote trilogy. So, After Hours, it's hedonism, it's self-destruction, it all leads to, you know, downfall, you know, the whole motif of blinding lights. You could say it's the lights of the city, or it could be the lights of an ambulance flashing in front of you as you're being, you know, stretchered on until, because you're probably, you know, overdosing on something, and by the time the album's over, it just sort of ends. That leads into Dawn FM, where you're sort of stuck in purgatory, not sure where to go. You go through this journey with the whole radio motif, and at the end, you're basically given two paths. One path to darkness, which is where you're going to end up. One path towards light, which gives you a chance to reflect, recover, and try again. At this point, my theory is the first half of the album is a relapse. It's back into those old tendencies of hedonism and drugs and sex. And by this point, halfway through the album, we're kind of at that point. This is it. There's nowhere else to go except to just say bye-bye. It takes a bit of a turn halfway through, though.
Yeah, when we say halfway, yeah, halfway. Because this is the most common talking point here, the fact that this is easily the longest record he's put out. Literally, like,
85 minutes!
That is, like, that's just about feature length, like, on the very short end of things.
Yeah, the first half of the track ends with another future feature. What a wonderful phrasing that is. Where they're going, why won't you let me sleep? Why won't you let me go? Why won't you let me try? Why won't you let me die? Then you can hear, I can never leave you alone, playing in the background. Just sort of, and the whole beat changes, the melody changes, the mood changes.
Yes, it certainly does.
Of course, we can always take that as a double entendre of sorts, because we're not sure if it's, you know, the light to recovery or a light from long ago, because, like they say, the lights are on, but nobody's home.
And then, of course, as we're getting into the back half, I still don't get Timeless.
Oh, boy. When you're being outclassed by both Future and Travis Scott, you have done something very wrong.
Yeah, this is a track that I went from being mad to just saying it's the worst one on the album. Like, yeah, this track is, I don't know, compared to other tracks on here, this was just the weakest. The weakest in production, the weakest in features, the weakest in how everything sounds. It's just, I don't know, it just sounds so blah. And well, you know, it's the one single that actually, well, I think this was in the top 10 of a while.
It peaked at number 3, and that's only because of the name attached to it.
Yeah, I think it's because most of the you know what fan base, and yeah. And the reason, and also I said something bad because after hearing the track, I can't wait to get there. AKA my favorite track, of the album with the best production in there, which him trying to get this angelic soul production on here. That sounds like something you would hear from Thundercat or Silk Sonic or Tyler or all three of them.
Yeah, that bass groove does sound like something I'd hear on a Tyler album.
Yeah, the way I was like, I can't wait to get there. Like, it sounds so beautiful. It sounds like, man, I wish this was longer. It's like, I mean, it's 3 minutes, but it sounds so heavenly. I just love it. Which is why I say I said Tyler sucks more.
Yeah, that is a very out-of-place track in the grand scheme of things. Like, if you cut that track or put it, like, earlier up in the track list, you would probably get a better experience. Track list matters. Track transitions matter. There's a way to do it right.
Yeah, there definitely needed to be some stronger raging and a few cuts. Like, okay, keeping in the realm of cinema for a second, like, if this album is about as long as a movie, and there is going to be a movie, one of the most important tools in a filmmaker's kit is having a really, really good editor. Someone who understands how to piece this stuff together just right. And that's something I feel like this album really could have used. Anyway, where does that take us to now?
I want to say...
a lot of good, because the rest of the album, the back half of it, very solid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mostly because everything sort of fits.
Yeah, I'll definitely give the back half a bit more credit. Like, I think these songs work better in kind of like the thematic album sense, whereas the handful of songs that I liked in the first half work better as, like, you know, just kind of raw banger type stuff. Of course, the big, you know, plus for me has to go to Big Sleep, mainly because it gets the man, the myth, the legend, Giorgio Moroder.
Yep. This was looking on me like, there was someone on me until the back here where it's like, is that a vocoder? Or that thing you use to do the whole electronic voice thingy?
Yep, that's what he does.
Yeah. Like,
I know that fucking synth anywhere when I hear it.
Yeah. I kind of figured since I mentioned Scarface earlier. That was more of the very ambitious. Ambitious tracks in there.
Yep, that was a real good one. Gotta be honest though, there's still like one more guest spot on here that we haven't talked about. I still don't get Lana Del Rey either.
I will say, in the context of where she is on the track The Abyss, throughout the albums, there's always Weekend mentioning a her. It could be one woman, it could be several women. It's sort of nice to actually hear a woman's voice on one of these tracks that isn't through a phone call, sort of bouncing off of him, and sort of build a much larger, you know, narrative. I'll let it slide this one time, because again, it's not mostly Lana's fault, it's mostly like Jack Antonoff's fault.
Yeah, maybe that's something that'll get more fleshed out in the movie, but this album, to put this in musical terms, especially since we just brought it up on the main weekly episode recently, this could have used more of like a somebody that I used to know vibe in a lot of the songs. Like, where you actually get to hear the woman speaking their piece.
Yeah, the one thing about that, that's kind of true, considering, you know, what you know about the Weeknd at all, which... Okay, yes, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, so I don't really have too much else to say about any, like, specific tracks. Most of my other observations are still just bigger picture stuff. Like, again, the big thing for me is that I think the fact that a lot of this was being, like, reworked right up to what feels like the 11th hour is, very reflective in what we get in the final release. Because, again, there needed to be, like, what we needed more than anything was someone to kind of, like, you know, just be like, okay, we need to arrange this differently. Some of this stuff doesn't need to be here. Because I feel like there's just so many songs on here that, okay, how do I put this? I would have cut this down to a relatively stronger track listing, and then if you just had to have all of the other songs there, make it like a deluxe edition that comes out when the movie comes out, you know?
There definitely needs to be some trims and better sequencing on here. But that being said, the last three tracks actually have great sequencing to them. Red Terror ending with, you know, the spoken word outro, Death is Nothing at All, it does not count, I only split way into the next room, leading into Call Me by the Old Familiar Name to get to... Without a Warning, where there's the theme of, you know, the audience, but in the concept of the narrative hearing him as the Weeknd one last time before he just sort of gets whisked away on the closing track, that was done very well. I think that had like the most work put into it. Because you had to stick the landing. If nothing else, the landing, the final moments had to be top-notch, perfect. This was as close as it could get to a perfect ending.
You know what they say, it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Yep, and of course I'm sure it'll lead into more detail with the movie when it comes out in May, which we gotta make plans for that, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay, I also mentioned that the final song also interpolates the song Heaven Waiting, Lady Lyrics off by the late David Lynch from Eraserhead, just to add some things.
Rest in peace. God, that's still a bummer.
Yeah.
So, I guess if I had to rank this trilogy against each other, I mean, I guess I feel like this is kind of like how most trilogies go. The second one was the best, the first one goes in the middle, and the third one was kind of at the end.
Yeah. That seems to be a fair analysis. I don't think this was ever the plan. It just sort of happened. Yeah, it does feel like this could have used a bit more focus and trimming to craft out a final ending. Like you could shave a couple songs off of this. You could cut some parts out. You would probably get a much better final product, but not the first pressing. The sequencing on that is just all over the place. It does not make a lick of sense.
I will say for me, well, considering the 2020 has pretty much been, it's been being into the weekend fully, you know, since the decade started. If I were to rank the trilogy, okay, of course the Undertale would be number one for me. I say this is a very distant second or a close second. I don't know, maybe because I dig some of the tracks more here than After Hours. I mean, After Hours was, they got more of the commercial appeal. Maybe because the more experimental audio, Artie Bass kind of wrote me in there more. I will say, with his album, like, it went on way too fucking long. You could have cut some tracks. I mean, there's some tracks I did like. There's some tracks I did like in the latter half, which, okay, there's some tracks here and there, like, Game Mercy I like, Drive I like. I do feel like listeners can be kind of a hassle. It's like, there's so much of me. I go back to some of the tracks, mainly some ones I mentioned that being the three Wimpy Up, Craft of Me, and I want to get there. Like, those three tracks probably the ones I go back to the most. But yeah, it could have got some better editing. You could have cut some songs out. If this is how the weekend go, or at least as the moniker of the weekend goes out, then it's not a perfect ending, but he did stick the landing in some areas. So yeah, this was again another grab for the weekend, or able tester for years, if you really say that go by now. But yeah, I definitely fuck with this.
I'll have to double check how I'm feeling about this by the end of the year. I'm not quite as certain of it as I was, like, with Dawn FM, that would be on my year-end list. But we'll see.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's good, but I'm not gonna, like, again, look, I read Dawn FM as the number one album of 2022. It's not gonna be number one, just saying.
Yeah, I will co-sign that. Like, I'll just go along with it. Dawn FM is number one for me. After Hours, I went back to it. A lot of the deeper cuts don't hit as well as it should. Maybe it's because of the passage of the time or something. As for this, it's going to take some time to sort of sit through. Need a little more reflection on it.
And with that, I think that's just about everything there is to be said about this album, and of all these albums that we have discussed so far. So, of course, thank you for listening. We'll, of course, be back with more weekly nonsense, And of course, the next album roundup, where things will hopefully pick up a bit more, because again, the March release calendar, fucking Christ.
Oh, that's going to be a big one.
That's right. And especially tomorrow. Well, I got something to do tomorrow.
Yeah, so again, thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us in all the places you know us. So, Surreal Resolution on Blue Sky, SurrealResolution.com. Be sure to follow us, you know, jump into the Discord if you find the link there for more chatting and all that fun business. So, until next time, thanks for listening and peace out.